Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Alexander Benz.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Some people can be content playing bingo and paying rent. That's PG for some people, for some come from people to be. But some people.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 594. I'm Amy Matheny, and I'm so excited about our show today because we have my very good friend. And one of our co-hosts, she's not a frequent co-host anymore because she's too damn busy. But our good friend at Windy City, Alexandra Billings, is on the show. She is one of the supporting characters and stars of Amazon Prime's new series, Transparent. And she's here to talk with us about it. And she's also going to help me launch something that I'm going to be trying to do over the next few weeks, the next few podcasts, where in honor of LGBT History Month, and this week, talking about, instead of talking about the famous LGBT people, whether that be Billie Jean King or Elton John or Ellen, or going back to Bayard Rustin or James Baldwin or Christine Jorgensen or Jane Addams or whomever, Lorraine Hansberry, we could go on and on and on and name wonderful people and their wonderful historical associations and cities now who are starting to honor LGBT historical figures. We have our Legacy Walk here in Chicago. But I wanted to look at our histories and our histories around when our history as LGBT people started based on when did you know? When did you know you were gay and or lesbian or bisexual or transgender? When did you know you were not straight? Because the assumption, I think, for all of us is that we're straight when born. and then there's this moment when we know. And so I'm going to talk with Alex about that today and Mitchell in the upcoming week and hopefully some other folks, some other co-hosts and guests that I can talk with. But just a moment of reflection for like, when did you know? And I guess for myself, I will just start off very briefly just saying, you know, I've heard sometimes that men or people born male know much sooner than women, but I don't know that to be true. However, that is my experience. I don't think I knew at a young age, and yet I remember that my first kiss in a dream was with Olivia Newton-John. I do remember that. I was probably 10 or 11. It was somewhere between Grease, Xanadu, and All Her Fabulousness. And I kissed Olivia Newton-John in a dream, which is very funny because I don't have a blonde thing. I don't like blondes very much, even though I'm a blonde myself. But I wouldn't call that knowing. You know, I didn't think anything of that. And dated guys from, you know, went together with guys in the seventh grade. And I don't know that I always felt a part of. I felt very socially capable as a young person, but just like I knew how to do what I needed to do to function socially. But I do think I never felt a part of, or that I truly got what some of my other friends got in junior high and high school, even elementary school, of feeling like you fit in, feeling like girls being boy crazy, even though I always had a guy I was going with. I just I don't know that I really understood it in the same way. And so, you know, for me, I really think I was fairly clueless, and I did not know until I kissed a girl. And, you know, I kissed a woman away at summer stock, which is what theater people do in the summer. And I was in college. And you know, theater people doing theater games. We were playing Truth or Dare one night, and I got dared to kiss this girl, and she was an attractive girl. Don't get me wrong, straight girl. And I kissed her, and it felt like everything changed for me. So I really, for me, I feel like I was a late bloomer. And then once I knew I couldn't unknow, I was bisexual, I think, for 5 or 6 months. That's what I called it, because I didn't know how to erase everything I knew before that kiss. And then from that point on, very shortly after I got into a relationship with a woman who was, older than myself by more than a decade. And so, I really feel like I started the coming out process very confident and very assured because of that first relationship. And my history began, and my history moved into me moving to Chicago and being asked to be a voice on Lesbian Gay Radio, and then, you know, moving into activism and all that. But I really feel like the one I knew for me was when I kissed a woman. And after that, I knew who I was, and it was a coming home. And then it's very hard when people ask me this question to not then filter back the dream where I kissed Olivia Newton-John, or the times when I felt very attached to babysitters or women in my life, usually older women, not my peers. And when I say older women, I mean like a 17-year-old when I was 10. Nothing sexual would have happened, but that I looked up to these women. And so I don't know. I don't know whether that taints that I just, I was just looking up to people, women that were more like what I wanted to be like, and I was attracted to that, or if I was attracted to them. I think it probably both are true. So that's when I knew. It took me kissing a girl, and I remember pulling away from the kiss and felt like smoke came out of my mouth, and felt like that's how I want to be kissed always. And I remember a thought bubble, like if it had been a cartoon, it felt like I had a thought bubble that said, wow, I don't ever want to be kissed differently than that. And that was it. You know, that was it for me. So the next few episodes of the show, hopefully I'll be sharing people that you hear on this show talking about that, and ask you to encourage yourself to think on it, and ask friends, you know, when did you know, and have you had that conversation and question? Often it's a question that, you know, straight people ask us, I think, or I experience that. Have you always known? But I think it's useful for us to share those stories with one another, because I do think that, and as you'll hear Alex say, you know, gender and sexuality is messy, and gender and sexuality is not rigid. And more as time passes, I think we're learning that. And people telling our stories makes that point very vivid. And this new show, Transparent, does that as well. Vivid and messy and compelling, compelling, compelling television. So Alexander Billings on the show today, talking about Transparent. Just shared a little of my own transparency with you. Lots going on in the LGBT news and theater world. Man, the boards, as we call theaters, The boards are heating up. Lots of great shows to see. And then we'll be on with Alex today on the Queercast.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. Houston Mayor Anise Parker has made the official shortlist for the 2014 World Mayor Prize, an international contest for the best mayor in the world. Parker has been elected Houston's mayor three times and garnered national attention for being the first openly gay mayor of a major U.S. city. She is one of three United States mayors, along with Oklahoma City Mayor Mick Cornett and Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson, to make the cut.
Former President Bill Clinton will deliver the keynote address at the 18th annual HRC National Dinner to be held on Saturday, October 25th in D.C. The National Dinner is sold out with over 3,000 guests attending.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan has officiated a same-sex wedding for the first time in her law career. The couple she married was Mitchell Reich, her former law clerk, and his husband. Other Supreme Court justices who have officiated at the weddings of gay and lesbian couples include Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and retired Justice Sandra Day O'Connor.
Transgender Californians will have the right to have their gender identity properly recognized on death certificates under legislation signed by Governor Jerry Brown. The governor signed AB 1577, the Respect After Death Act. Starting in January, the legislation requires the person who files out a death certificate for a transgender person to record the sex that reflects his or her gender identity.
And Governor Brown has also signed into law AB 2501, legislation that prohibits the use of gay panic and transgender panic defenses to reduce murder charges to manslaughter in criminal trials. In using the panic defenses, defendants have argued that their violent behavior was a rational response to discovering their victims were LGBT. AB 2501 ensures that defendants cannot use gay and transgender panic defenses in an attempt to lower a charge from murder to manslaughter or to escape conviction in California.
The EEOC, or the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, has filed two historic lawsuits challenging cases of discrimination against two transgender people in two states. The EEOC filed the complaints in federal courts in Florida and Michigan against two separate companies accused of discriminating against transgender employees, Amy Stevens of Michigan and Brandy Branson of Florida. This is the first time the EEOC has used the protections of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to bring lawsuits challenging gender identity-based discrimination.
There are currently no publicly gay CEOs at any Fortune 500 companies. Despite reports, Apple CEO Tim Cook has never actually come out of the closet. Billionaire PayPal founder Pete Thiel, who is openly gay, has theorized that one of the main reasons for the lack of gay CEOs, at least in public, could be a perception of discrimination. Thiel also said it could be a generational issue, since a lot of the CEOs at Fortune 500 companies are older, and that we'll see more come out in the next decade or two.
Beginning this year, applicants to Northwestern University's graduate school will be asked about their sexual orientation. The aim of the question, the school stated, is to gain a better understanding of the school's community to better serve all in the school. Among other schools that ask this particular question of students are the University of Iowa, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and Illinois' Elmhurst College.
In world news, human rights activists have called for the immediate repeal of new laws passed in Indonesia's conservative Aceh province that make gay sex punishable with 100 lashes of the cane, calling it an enormous step backward. Aceh is the only part of the significantly Muslim nation that is allowed to implement Islamic Sharia law and already carries out public canings for gambling, drinking alcohol, and fraternizing with the opposite sex outside of marriage. The bylaw will also be the first in Aceh to be applied to non-Muslims, both Indonesians and foreigners. Gay sex is not illegal in the rest of the country.
Russia's high court has upheld the country's ban on so-called LGBT propaganda, claiming it was necessary to prevent children from being recruited into non-heterosexual society. In so ruling, the court also said the law was not an outright ban or censure of homosexuality.
Thousands of Serbian police officers in full gear with water cannons and armored personnel carriers sealed off sunny downtown for Belgrade's Pride Parade. Several hundred LGBT individuals from Serbia, the former Yugoslavia, Italy, Greece, Germany, and Canada marched their way through practically empty streets of Belgrade for the first time since 2010, calling for greater tolerance, equal rights, and the right to civil partnerships.
Following the international outcry over Russia's anti-gay legislation that overshadowed the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics, the International Olympic Committee announced in a letter to prospective host cities that it would be adding a new anti-discrimination clause to its host city contract. The new clause will include the prohibition of any form of discrimination using the wording of Fundamental Principle 6 of the Olympic Charter.
In entertainment news, Broadway star Cheyenne Jackson has tied the knot with entrepreneur Jason Landau. Among the 200 guests at the wedding were Jane Lynch, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, Leah Remini, and Alicia Silverstone. This is Jackson's second marriage.
Nate Berkus and husband Jeremiah Brent recently shared that they are expecting a baby. They are expecting officially to be a family in the spring of 2015.
Michael C. Hall of Dexter will assume the title role in the Broadway revival of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Hall will join the musical October 16th through January 4th. The role of Hedwig is currently being played by Andrew Rannells, who took over in August after Neil Patrick Harris left the production.
Former Baywatch star Jason Simmons, an Australian who played Logan Fowler, recently talked about the show's 25th anniversary and his sexuality. Simmons, age 44, surprised fans when he came out in 2008, but he said his co-stars were never in the dark about his sexuality and were very supportive.
Gay actor Ben Whishaw of Skyfall and Cloud Atlas fame will lead the cast of BBC Two's new drama series, London Spy. The five-part thriller, which comes from acclaimed gay author Tom Rob Smith, stars Whishaw as Danny, a romantic who falls to the antisocial Alex after a chance encounter.
Aspen Gay Ski Week, the nation's largest and oldest gay ski event, returns for the 38th year, January 11th through the 18th of 2015. Proceeds from the event will benefit Roaring Fork Gay and Lesbian Community Fund. In 2014, the Ski Week welcomed 5,000 guests to the legendary mountain town.
Singer K.D. Lang has sparked rumors of a new romance with the estranged wife of Canadian billionaire ice hockey team boss N. Murray Edwards. The singer has been spotted on numerous dinner dates with Heather Edwards, and they have reportedly bonded over their shared passion for Buddhism.
Hartley Rathaway, a.k.a. Pied Piper, who was one of the first openly gay DC comic characters back in the mid-1980s, will make his way to Central City after the mid-season break on the new CW series, The Flash. While Pied Piper originated as a villain in the comics, he's actually one of the bad guys in DC Comics history who eventually reformed and started fighting against the forces of evil.
A love story about the intersecting lives of three women, the award-winning romantic drama True Love, debuts across all digital platforms beginning October 7th, before making its DVD debut on November 4th from Wolf Video. The acclaimed lesbian romance follows True, a 37-year-old bed-hopping lesbian who becomes unexpectedly smitten with Alice, an elegant 60-year-old who has come to town to visit her daughter.
And Matt Bomer, who has been set to star opposite Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe in The Nice Guys, the action drama that Iron Man 3's Shane Black wrote and is directing, with Joel Silver producing at Warner Brothers. Bomer is also attached to play the late actor Montgomery Clift in the biopic Monty Clift.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, you're listening to Lucy Lawless on Windy City Queercast with my favorite girl, Amy.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Kaweez!
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 6th, 2014, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Torchlight Music Theater presents Stephen Sondheim's brilliant and bloody thrill ride, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. The first production in their Season of Sondheim at Stage 773 through November 9th. Tickets at torchlightmusictheater.org.
Timeline Theater Company's Chicago premiere of My Name is Asher Lev is a masterpiece of a production, raves the Chicago Sun-Times. My Name is Asher Lev follows a young Jewish painter torn between his upbringing and his art. Tickets are going fast for the final weeks at Stage 773. My Name is Asher Lev must close October 18th. Visit timelinetheater.com.
The family of a Wall Street criminal faces the fallout of public scandal and guilt by association in the Commons of Pensacola, a new drama by actress-turned-playwright Amanda Peet. Hailed by the New York Times as rich and absorbing, laced with biting humor, this funny and incisive debut has its Midwest premiere at Northlight Theater, now through October 19th. Visit northlight.org.
Meet two of the greatest minds in history, a battle of intellects and egos, in Ryder Theater's Midwest premiere of Isaac's Eye. Playwright Lucas Nath introduces a young Isaac Newton to the great Robert Hooke, the most important scientist in Britain at the time. Don't miss Isaac's Eye at Ryder's Theater in Glencoe, just minutes from Chicago on the Edenser Metro. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org.
Chicago Shakespeare's King Lear is your chance to see the acclaimed actor Larry Yando in a role of a lifetime. Chicago Tribune declares his performance a tour de force, the highlight of a career. And Chicago Sun-Times raves Lear is highly recommended. Now, through November 9th, for tickets, visit chicagoshakes.com.
In a momentous 25th anniversary celebration, River North Dance Chicago returns to the Harris Theater Friday, October 10th and Saturday, October 11th. Featuring two premieres of athletic and soul-stirring dance, including Frank Chavez's all-male work In the End. River North performs one weekend only, October 10th and 11th. Visit rivernorthchicago.com.
Lifeline Theater opens its 2014-15 season of Big Stories up close with Jane Eyre, a highly theatrical adaptation of Charlotte Bronte's beloved classic. Runs Thursdays through Sundays through October 26th. More at lifelinetheater.com.
Now playing at Timeline Theater is the political conspiracy thriller Danny Casolaro Died for You. Based on true events, it tracks the real-life Danny as he works to uncover high-level government corruption. Don't miss the Chicago premiere running through December 21st. Visit timelinetheater.com.
On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the smash hit rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet, now playing at the Apollo Theater. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
Make me alive. Make me alive. Make me confused. Mock me with praise. Let me be used very days, but alone is alone.
With the new series Transparent, Amazon Prime has hit original programming gold with the show that's the critical darling of this 2014 fall TV season. It has been earning glowing reviews pretty much across the board from television critics. And our very own friend and frequent, though not as much of late because she's been busy, co-host Alexander Billings, and full disclosure, very good friend of mine. She teased us about Transparent and the show coming to Amazon the last time she was on, but now with the launch, it's all happening, and we're just thrilled to be along for her wild ride and to have her on the Queercast. Hey, Alex, how are you?
Hi, Amy.
Amy
Matheny.
Amy Matheny. Do you remember that?
You know, oh, my God. Do you know what I was just thinking as you were doing that thing that you were just doing, whatever that thing is called you were just doing? Do you remember Let's Try Gay Radio?
Yes.
And every time we would do the, like, beginnings and the endings of stuff, it would always freak me out because I never understood, like, because you would record 55 things at once. I'll never forget that. You would go in the studio and you would be like, hi, this is Amy Matheny, and I'm standing on top of walrus right now, and they are very happy. Hi, this is Amy Matheny. I'm in hot air balloon with Liberace's cousin. Like, I was like, what is happening? So I love listening to you. Intro radio.
Oh, intro radio. It's very
intro
exciting.
Radio.
Hey, tell me, I mean, do you feel like everything has changed? Because I'm not even talking about your life. I'm talking about, like, I feel like everything has changed because of this television series in the world.
Everything has changed? Really?
I really do. I feel like it's pretty radical television programming. The conversation and the exploration of gender identity and sexuality is like, wow, this is not even 101. This is like 401 AP working on your doctorate type stuff. And yet, just amazing. Let's go to the basics, though. What's the series about? Tell me who some of the characters are and just kind of just a short overview of what Transparent, the series, is about.
Well, you know, funnily, it really is about this family mm-hmm. who really lives on a foundation of hope and their ability to come together and traverse through the path that is, you know, this complex human existence. It really is just this nuclear family that is, mm-hmm. you know, doing the best they can. Now, you know, that's thematically. Now, specifically, the story centers around Jeffrey Tambor, who is a fantastic human being with a spirit that is made of golden light and a sense of humor that you just would put Phyllis Diller to shame. He's just hilarious. And he plays a middle-aged father of three children, grown-up children, who is beginning his transition from male to female. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's really interesting, I'll tell you what's fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of fascinating things, and I'm so blessed and humbled. But the really fascinating thing is when you look at the show, the transgender character, Maura is her name, he is really the only one who's not in need of terrible therapy.
That's right. I mean, like, that's exactly right.
Everyone around him is falling apart. Yeah. And he seems to be this sort of... There was a fabulous scene. I wasn't on set this day, and I wasn't in this episode. But Gabby Hoffman's character, the youngest daughter, comes to Maura, who is dressed as Maura and beginning to live as Maura. And it's after a funeral, and there's a lot of stuff that went on, and they had this terrible argument about responsibility, and Maura says, I pay for your life, and so, you know, you're not independent. And Gabby Hoffman has this magnificent monologue where she takes out a lot of money, and she starts throwing one by one this money on top of Maura's head and her shoulders as she sits crouched in his chair. And Jeffrey Tambor is so still and peaceful and kind and understanding and compassionate that you actually feel remorse for the whole family through him. Mm-hmm. And that really is the crux of this show.
It is interesting, right? Because for those of you who are listeners, you know, you can watch this show on Amazon Prime, and you can binge watch the new kids are all binge watching.
All your kids with your binge watching.
You're binge watching. Mitchell and I, Mitchell Fain, my fabulous frequent co-host on the show, you know, we are watching the show, and we don't want to binge it too much because we don't want it to end. But we sit there, and I mean, listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you've done that for a while, you've heard a lot of me and Mitchell Fain. You know it's something big when Mitchell and I turn to one another, have to hit pause on my computer and go, what is happening? What is happening? We keep hitting our hands, our palms to our forehead, and we're like, what? What is happening? Like, we are just, I mean, yeah. it's Here's the thing. It's difficult to watch. It's so messy. It's so, it's not that it's like being shocking for shock value, though I do think some of mainstream America will think that. And we'll talk here in a bit about the, you know, with the praise is going to come criticism too, you know, because this is, as I said, I think everything has changed because of this television show. But, but I think, you know, it's so human and messy, and it does feel like so much is happening to these three kids, that they are just grown-ups who are, you know, just full of so much identity neuroses and sexual neuroses and, you know, like self-centered ways of being. And it is really interesting to see that this character that most people would see as probably, you know, having this event, the father, having father slash what they call him, the Mappa, which I love, the mother Papa. But, you know, that you would think, well, this is the character who's going through the event in her life now. And yet that event has almost really happened now. It's just like, oh, this is actually already, this is happening. Like, this is happening. This is here. And it's these reverberations of these, you know, children, of that's really, really fascinating. Anyhow, I don't know what any of that meant, but it's what is happening is my t-shirt for your show.
Well, there's a lot going on in this show. There's a lot going on in 30 minutes.
I can't believe how much happens in 30 minutes.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. So everybody's got some things happening to them from one moment to the next.
Who is Davina, which is the character you play?
I am Jeffrey's, I want to say best friend, but that really is sort of hasn't happened yet. So I think good friend and guide, really, through this transgender experience. I'm the first one, not the first one, but the first one that takes him to my heart in a truthful way from our transgender community, and I think I'm his bridge, and he really is mine. He reminds me to stay grounded. He reminds me of family. You know, so we both give each other these very important gifts.
Yeah. How has it been? Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I was really adamant about Davina being the friend and the guide, and then being transgender, that it wasn't about stereotypes, it wasn't about caricatures, it wasn't about, and, you know, I love my community, and I've never thought of myself of anything else except a transgender female, always.
Right.
But I wanted it to be really clear to Jill, the producer and writer and creator, Soloway, that it was important to me that I was me, you know, just with these other attributes, so that we had a cross selection of the transgender community. You know, that there are transvestites, there are drag queens, there are female impersonators, there are transgender people, post-op, pre-op, you know, all kinds of. Our community is represented to the best of our ability. I mean, it's television, so we can't do everything, but.
Yeah. But how is it? I mean, there are lots of, I mean, are they getting it right? I mean, it seems to me they're getting it right. And it seems that they're using a lot of trans actors on the show. There are, right? There are a lot of.
Oh, my God. Amy, I've never, with the exception of when I worked at maybe The Baton and, you know, did that in Club Victoria and Lacage in the 80s. I've never been around this many transgender people, and I mean crew and costume and PR and actors and extra. I mean, they have, it's like a transgender clown car. it's insane. Like, we're coming out of the woodwork. It's amazing.
And they have also represented different generations. And Ian Harvey is playing the character of Dale. And
Ian Harvey is he's so dreamy.
Ian is a very good friend of one of my camp friends who lives in North Carolina, and she's wanted me to know Ian for years. And when I posted about you being on the show and it about to premiere, she was like, oh my gosh, Ian's on this show, Amy. She was like, you need to know. So shout out to Nikki Corey, Nikki Knott now, who is Ian's friend in North Carolina. But
he's wonderful in it. He's
Ian
really
Harvey,
wonderful.
Who is a comedian and performer and plays Dale, female to male, trans character on the show. And Tracy Lissette, am I saying that name right?
Yes, she is just a dreamboat.
Shay, who's kind of, you know, forgive me, but she's kind of the young generation of this trans community.
Absolutely. Listen, we need...
The new,
the show is very clear about these are grown-up people in this show. Now, luckily, there's a lot of flashbacks, so we have a lot of the younger generation, but, you know, when you're talking about the transgender community, nobody really thinks that we have a younger generation. They don't think we have transgender children. You know, they think that we wait until a certain amount of time and then we make this choice at like 20. Mm-hmm. So the great thing for me is to explore our youth. And so having Tracy, I mean, she's, you know, older than 7 years old, of course, but to have this younger generation, I think, is important for us so that we're, you know, human.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because obviously, you know, a lot of story is trying to be told here. And like I said, it is chocked full, folks. I mean, it really, really is. And it's definitely, though, a particular lens, this story, because it's about a family. So this is a white family. This is a Jewish family. This is a wealthy family. This is a California family. And all of those things are true. Do you think that we're going to get more, is this going to reach people who don't identify with those types of communities? I mean, I guess that's just a question for you, not that that's a yes or no answer, but what do you think? I mean, how do
well,
we
that's
make
a real,
universal?
That's a really smart question. I think if you look at the shows that were the biggest, that were popular, you know, that reverberated within us, the shows that did that were the ones that stayed truthful,
yeah,
not the ones that tried to appeal to everyone.
Right.
You know, you look at classic TV shows like All in the Family or West Wing or even the Mary Tyler Moore Show, or, you know, you can go as far back as That Girl. You know, if you look at the things that were the most truthful to the people who were involved in the project, I think that resonates with us. I mean, you look at, it's true with plays, it's true with paintings, sculpture, any kind of art that comes from a true place of your own heart space,
yeah,
I think will connect with other human beings. And this comes from these writers and from Jill and Faith, her sister, Faith Soloway. This comes from a very, very true place.
And can you talk a little more about that, the autobiographical?
Well, their father, and they have said this, I'm not telling anything
right,
that they haven't already said, but their father is transitioning, Jill and Faith's father. So this came from a place, I think, of a need, you know, much like any great playwright, a need to I always tell my students that authors dream so big, the dream is so huge that they have to write it down.
Mm.
They cannot, it cannot be contained.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were involved in this shift in their family that was so large, it shook the foundation, it shook their feet, and they had to write it down.
Yeah.
And I think as long as they keep doing that, I think people will watch.
It is interesting, we're talking about, you know, the character of Maura, you know, is really the calm center of the storm. It's really the eye of the storm, right? The eye of the tornado. And
yeah,
and is also why I think, you know, when I said this is like, you know, sexuality and gender identity, like 401 AP, PhD, you know, whatever it's yeah. because Maura's the least sexual person on the show.
Yeah.
I haven't finished the whole show. So for me so far on episode like 6 or 7, you know, it's interesting, you know, that these, it really does for people break down the difference of gender and sexuality just in that, line divided, which doesn't mean Maura has to stay a non-sexual character or that the kids will continue with whatever all their sexual journey that they all three seem to be on. But it's just interesting to note, right, for people who are like, well, what's the difference in sexuality and gender? I don't understand, you know, and that isn't, you know, 20 years ago, I think that was less understandable to people. And I think now, today, it's becoming more and more clear because we're becoming smarter on both topics. But I'm just curious for you, you know, if you see that distinction and you see that clarity of the show trying to present really complicated ideas about gender and sexuality, and how, what are the conversations that you all have about that around the table or in filming episodes?
Well, you know, that I believe both are fluid. I believe, both can be learned and both are genetic. And what I mean by that is, I knew from a very early age what I was. I just didn't have a name for it. Now, what I was taught was how to behave. Mm-hmm. I also knew who I wanted affection from, emotional, spiritual, sexual affection from. But then again, like my gender, I was taught how to behave. Mm. Where those two things come from, I have no idea. You'd have to ask, you know, a gender doctor, a PhD some kind. But I do know, and I know this from every other person that I've spoken to, that within those containers, there is definite fluidity.
Yeah.
Meaning, oh, you see someone across the street, and whether they're male or female, you think, oh, well, she's attractive. Now, do you want to have sex with them? Who knows? I don't know if that would happen. And you don't really know either until you get into a situation. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think is so eternally fascinating to us as human beings. Because think about all the rules everybody's making now. Like, you cannot marry a person of the same sex because the world is going to implode. Or you must either emotionally and sexually connect with either males or females.
Right.
And this whole conversation really is about, how does this affect me? If you're dressing like a man and you're involved in a relationship with a woman, then I understand that in a very particular way, depending on where I was born and how I was raised. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing something that doesn't make any sense to me because of what I've learned, I'm uncomfortable.
Right.
So we're imposing all these rules because we don't want to get nervous at cocktail parties. I mean, that's what it basically boils down to. We don't want to have these conversations.
Yeah. Labels, and we're labels and boxes and columns.
Well, I think that's right. See, because if I can decide what you are, then I can make a decision about me.
That's right.
When in reality, all that stuff is a done deal. Okay. You just have to, ease yourself into an acceptance of who you are. You don't have to listen to other people tell you.
Yeah. You know what? It's just now that I'm having the aha moment that the box trolls and Transparent are saying exactly the same thing. And that makes me very, very happy. I'm not kidding. I saw box trolls with a 9-year-old and I'm like, you know, they all have little boxes and they're little trolls and they live in boxes. And if you got a box of peas, then you're peas. And if it's a light bulb, you're light bulb. And, you know, it's like,
that's supposed to be a really good movie, strangely.
It's okay. But it's trying to have a really profound message. But you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
The 9-year-old I went with was like, I get what they were trying to say. I think they could have said it more effectively. And I was like,
yeah.
Smart kid.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You know, we're kind of doing a bit of a series because it's Gay History Month this month, and I've been talking to people and saying, or I'm going to be talking to people. You'll be the first person talking to Mitchell as well, and hopefully Deb Pierce up in Toronto. But instead of looking at like, oh, the history of famous people, which LGBT famous people, I was kind of like wanting to look back at our own histories, you know, what our histories have been as LGBT people and how that affects LGBT history moving forward. And so one of the questions that I'm going to be asking is the question that I think is essential for our conversation about ourselves is, when did you know? And so I guess I'm asking you that question, you know, to when did you know? When did you know you were trans? When did you know what you knew? And there may be different moments of that story.
Well, like I said, I've always known. I've always known that when people spoke to me as they spoke in the same way they spoke to my brother, I knew it had nothing to do with me. Mm. Now, I didn't, you know, I'm 53 years old, so this was a very long time ago, and we didn't even have the word transgender, so I didn't have a word for what that meant. I just knew that it wasn't me. I always felt like people were looking past me and never at me.
This is earliest memories. You're talking really early.
Oh, God, like, since I can remember.
Five,
the first
four,
thing
whatever.
I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
First thing you remember. Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, that's why when people talk about indoctrination of any kind, which just makes this insane, I always think, yes, but I never had gay people around me.
Right.
There was nothing on television in the 60s that could have even remotely suggested homosexual, and certainly not transgender. Certainly not.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then did you know by self-actualization? When did you have something that mirrored back to you a connection?
Well, I was about 15 or 16 years old. And I don't know if I've ever told you this story before, but I was about 15 or 16 years old, and I really couldn't take it anymore, the voices and I really couldn't see living the rest of my life so tortured, bullied on the outside and spiritually twisted on the inside. Mm. So I took a handful of pills, and I went into my bedroom, and I closed the door, and I sat on the edge of my bed, and I turned on the TV, because I'm a TV baby. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to kill myself, which is what I was planning on doing, I need to have some kind of comfort. So that's why I turned on the TV. And on the television came Phil Donahue, who was Oprah before there was Oprah. And he was doing, and this is a true story, he was doing a special on, it was one of his special programs, on these four fantastic showgirls. Like Las Vegas showgirls, lashes and wigs, and they looked beautiful, and they were funny and smart and silly and sort of outrageously connected to their own fabulousness in a really kind of grounded way. They were okay with who they were. And then, about halfway into the episode, I'm sitting there with the pills in my hand, transfixed by the sparkliness of these women. He says, and by the way, all these women were born men. And I said out loud, oh my God, there I am.
Mm.
And that was it.
Yeah.
That was a self-identification, an image that never left me.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the pills down. And eventually I ended up working with those women who actually, Sherry Payne, Leslie Regenet, China Nguyen, and Chili Pepper from the Baton Show Lounge. I actually ended up working with all those four women, which is how strange my life is. But it's the other reason, and I told that story actually to Jill Soloway, because I said it's the other reason that this television show, this little TV show we're doing, is so important, because I'm telling you, things may be different, Amy, and you may be right. Everything may be changing, and I agree with you. I feel like I'm in the middle of the change. But I also know, and I think you know this too, that there are youth out there who are not a thing. has changed.
No, I'm not saying everything has changed for all people. I am just saying, you know, that you're exactly saying what I'm saying, which is that everything has changed because you all are having an even deeper conversation. I mean, Phil Donahue was having the conversation that they were capable of having at that time, and it was enough, and it was a visual, right? But now you have the visual, and you have this in-depth, very human story, you know, being told, and people participating in that storytelling, right? From every
angle. Well, that's right, and think of it this way, like, if any youth or even anybody in their 30s, 40s, or 50s feels marginalized in any way, especially the LGBT committee, they can now turn to their children or their wives or their parents or grandparents and pull them towards the television set and point at one of us and go, that, do you see that? That's what I am. That's who I am. Mm-hmm. I don't have a word for this thing and I don't understand it, but watch this show.
Mm-hmm.
At least we're there.
Yeah. Yeah. Will there, not that we're results oriented, but the show has been named one of the hot shows of the year. It's been on everybody's list in the top, you know, even five shows to watch this year. What is the conversation around a second season, and when and how will that get determined? Have you heard anything?
I have heard some things, and I don't really know how much I'm able to say anything about it, but yes, I have heard some things, and there are some really great, interesting surprises happening around the corner, because, you know, those Pfeffermans, those wacky Pfeffermans.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's a show that, as I said, you know, I mean, 10 episodes feels like a bit of a major tease, and, you know, and great for Amazon getting in the race for original programming. I know they had tried this before, but they feel like now they've really got solid legs under them. And, you know, with other Netflix and Hulu and other people doing original programming, you know, and we saw at the Emmys this year, you know, viable candidates for awards, and obviously hopefully that garners attention and dollars and keeping these stories alive and coming.
Well,
to
certainly,
us,
you know, and the other unsung hero really of this whole thing, this whole event, this whole magnificent event is Amazon. I mean, you got to give these guys credit, these people who, and I don't mean they're all men, but these people credit, because they really, they were behind. I mean, I actually saw and met the president of Amazon. He came to the set. He came to a photo shoot. They would sit in meetings. I mean, these were just people that went, yeah, go ahead and make your transgender show. They're interested in it.
Yeah.
They're part of it. They speak to Jill constantly. They're with her. Mm-hmm. They're helping cast. I mean, I think that's the other thing that's helping this show remain grounded and in some kind of great, beautiful truth, is that there's so much support already.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. If you're not watching it, start watching it. Be prepared. I think you should pause, because honestly, it stays with you and it soaks in. So, but whatever you need to do, the young kids are doing the binge watching. Mitchell and I are far too old. We can't, our hearts can't handle
hilarious.
It. We can't handle it. We're like, oh, I need to go have a drink, or I need to go take a nap, or I need to, like, I need to see
need
you in like 2 days, you know? We're like, I'm wrung out.
That's like, hilarious.
I mean, honestly, and it's really interesting, you know, because it is like watching that. I don't know when I've watched a show where sometimes I want to reach through the screen and go, no, 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 you know, or just
right.
Like, oh my God, hold on, hold on, hold on, you know? And
yeah.
Without it being like manipulative, without it being, I don't know. You have to watch the show to understand what I'm saying. It would be a hard show for me to watch with my folks. I'm not going to be dishonest about that. You know, it is,
sure.
It is, you know, it is a now generation show,
mm-hmm.
to me. Not because it's shocking for shock value, but I just think, as I said, this is not 101 stuff, but it is fantastic. And look, if you're watching, if you're listening to this podcast, you have no problems. I mean, watch this show. Yeah. You want to be watching
yeah,
the show.
Right.
You know, but, you know, it's really brave. It's brave, and it's in full flight on this leap of glorious ecstatic faith that this thing is on.
And
get on the ride, folks. If you're not an Amazon Prime member, it's a great reason to become one. I am one. Amazon's not paying me and they're not a sponsor, but I will tell you that if you and your family, you and your partner, you know, you buy things, which we all do. And if you buy, if you do any online shopping, and most of us do, you know, if you do it through Amazon and you buy a Prime membership, you pay one fee, you get all this television, and there's other great shows. I was just looking for a piece of information for your show and saw that, like, I can watch all season one of Orphan Black, which is another show I want to watch on Amazon Prime as well. It's not one of their original shows, but so there's other shows you can watch, you know, regular network and movies and all that kind of stuff on instant video. But you also get all of your shipping free for the year. So whether you, like last Christmas, my brother and I brought my parents finally into the year 2000 and got them high definition thin televisions, and we got them one for downstairs, one for upstairs, and we got them on Amazon Prime. There was no shipping. That shipped to our back door. I mean, we didn't have to schlep a television, 42-inch television, you know, go to the store, pick it up. We just got to order on Amazon, and then it was right there. So, you know, it was free because I'm an Amazon Prime member. So it's a great investment, you know, especially if you buy stuff, and then you get all this great television. So cable is a thing of the old world almost nowadays, but being an Amazon Prime is great for your shopping needs, and it's also great for your television needs, and you get to support fantastic programming like Transparent. And I mean, I would give $90 a year just to have a show like that be available for people to see. I mean,
I think that's a great point, Amy, and I think it's also really important for the LGBT community to recognize that, you know, the more we support LGBT centered programming or art, period, the more we do continue our history.
That's right.
So I think it's important for us to stay afloat in the public eye, because now people are going to be having conversations about it. I think that's
exactly,
you know,
right.
I think that's another impetus for people to fork over some bucks.
And as I said, it's a good investment. You will probably get every dollar of it back from you if you buy books, or, you know, you buy anything, buy a toaster, buy a television, buy a coat, buy anything you can get on Amazon Prime. And the other great thing is when you buy on Amazon Prime, you get it within 1 or 2 days. Always.
Yeah.
Always, if it's an Amazon Prime item.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
You forgot to buy a gift, you buy something online, you've got it in 48 hours or less.
You should do a commercial for Amazon. That was really good.
You should connect me with the president of Amazon. They should
be.
I'm telling you. Now that you've met him, now he's your pal.
Yeah, he's my pal.
Do not miss Transparent. All the episodes are up and available for your binge watching or slow watching pleasure. Mitchell and I are we will get through it here very shortly, and then we'll talk about it. But somebody needs to design the T-shirt. What is happening? And that would be
genius, with a picture of Maura on the front going,
what is happening? Transparent.
Genius.
That's all I think it should be. I love you. I'm so excited for your success, and thank you for being a part of our Windy City family, and for coming on and talking with us about this exciting moment in television and exciting moment in storytelling that you're a part of.
Thank you,
I'm so
Amy.
Glad you are. Transparent is on Amazon Prime right now, so download it and watch now.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everyone, get Amazon Prime. Have a great week. Mitchell Fains with me next week. I'm going to spend some time talking with Mitchell about Gay History Month and when did he know, and I hope that you will join us for that as well. Have a great October, everyone. Stay warm, and go find out histories from those people that you know and love. Maybe you haven't asked them questions about themselves and when did they know, and other questions you just want to know. Be more transparent in your life so others can see you. All right, everyone. Have a great week. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.